The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Cullen Steele, coordinating and supervising behind the scenes. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. At 4:20, a little after, it's a former Super Bowl champ and part of that 2007 National Championship team for the LSU Fighting Tigers. Marlon Favorite, you hear him on the LSU Sports Network for pregame. He follows Herb Tyler and I each and every week, and we'll talk to him about Saints and certainly about the big matchup between LSU, Alabama this coming Saturday, and you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL. And at 2 o'clock, it'll be Herb Tyler and I will be at Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge and giving you 2.5 hours of pregame coverage. And then we'll throw it to Fave and his group. And at 4:40 today, Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, will join us, give us a little SEC talk. Also want to talk to Zach about recruiting as Kim Mulkey has landed another big recruit. And what's left high school-wise for the LSU Tigers as we're getting closer and closer to that early signing date in December. Already, Darren Rizzi is sort of shaking up the staff a little bit with the Saints, and he's made some moves, which included today moving veteran defensive line coach, and he was a former coordinator for many years in the SEC, Todd Grantham. He's now been put to a defensive advisor role, and the new defensive coach is the longtime assistant defensive line coach and former Saints player, Brian Young. So Brian will take care and be in charge of the defensive line. He had worked with them. You could see he was one of the pass rush guys working with the group on pass rush moves and counter moves to get off of people. And so Brian Young has now been elevated to defensive line coach, and he will work with linebackers coach Mike Hodges, who is now both of them will work together to be in charge of the run defense game plan. And certainly Joe Woods being the coordinator, he'll work with the corners. Marcus Robinson will work with the safety group. So Darren Rizzi putting his stamp, so to speak, on the type of staff he wants, and he did it real early in moving Todd Grantham now to a defensive advisor role. And Brian Young, he's been there forever. As an assistant defensive line coach. And again, we've seen him at practices and everything. He works with the technical part with the pass rush people and trying to use pass rush moves to get a little bit of pressure up front. Cullen, I see, man, we got the lines all lit up. Let's go to that before we do anything else. Let's go to Shane on the North Shore. Shane, you're in the huddle with Mike.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, dude?
All right, Shane, what's happening, baby?
Hey, Broadman, shoot, first time caller here.
Okay.
And I'm on the North Shore. Man, Mickey Loomis, bro. What's the deal with him? Why ain't them Mickey Loomis on the hot seat, man? Shoot him, man. He could just bad him with the money, bad with the picks. Shoot, all the moves that we have made lately, the last couple of seasons.
Okay, Shane, let me answer your question. Mickey Loomis is going to leave the Saints when he wants to. Okay, it's going to be on his terms. He is part of the Benson will when something's going to happen to Gail Benson. Dennis Lauscher is the top guy, and Mickey's going to be part of it when if something happens, when something's going to happen to Ms. Benson. They're going to be part of selling the Saints and most likely to the Pelicans the exact same way. Mickey's probably the most powerful general manager in the NFL that's not an owner. And so he's going to be part of the structure here. If he is kind of advisor to Gail Benson, kind of overlooking football operations. He said it last year when we asked him about it. Are you thinking about retiring? And he said, you know, one day I might wake up and say I've had enough. But that day ain't today. And so, Shane, put it to you this way. Mickey Loomis is going to leave the Saints when he wants to. A lot of people don't want to hear that, but that is reality, that he's going to leave them on his terms. And so just to answer your question, that's basically the backdrop. And I look at it this way. Even if he would take an advisory position, who would hire the new general manager? Mickey Loomis. It wouldn't be Gail Benson. It was not going to be Dennis Lauscher. They're going to be part of it, but it's going to be Mickey Loomis. So Mickey Loomis is going to have a major say in this organization until he says, I don't want to anymore. Stone Cold used to say it because that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. Well, that's part of the will and the structure of this team, and that's just the way it's going to be set up. So thanks for the call, Shane. Appreciate it, buddy. And call back soon. Let's go to Larry in the Saints truck. Larry, man, it's been a while, buddy. How you been?
Hey, Mike, how you been, bud? Nice talking to you.
Same here, Larry.
I'm going to see you tomorrow night, Chess. But anyway, okay, I just wanted to get you
Come
put
see
on.
Us. Me and
what's
Steve.
What's going on with the team? Can the interim coach handle this, or is it the players? What's going on with this team, Mike? Give me a heads up and tell Bobby I said hi, and I'll see you tomorrow night, babe.
Good.
Thank you.
Good talking to you, Larry. I'll see you tomorrow night, and Steve Geller and I will be at the Treasure Chest Casino out in Kenna, and we'll be there from 4 to 7 doing sports talk there. So, Larry, I'll see you out there. Larry, to answer your question, this is a personnel issue. Think about it. Since the 2017 draft, the Saints have one player that they've selected that's an all-pro player. That's Eric McCoy. He's the best player you got on the team if you were trying to move him. Which you not, but he's the most valuable guy you got. And what happened after he got hurt in the third, early in the third game? Your offense ain't looked the same. I've been talking about center position is so vital for every team, but it goes to show you they've missed on so many early round picks. Peyton Turner's he's part of the rotation. Isaiah Foskey, he's playing on special teams. Kendra Miller, he's talented, but he can't stay healthy at all. Those are vital spots on this team. It's not being filled. Nick Saldiveri, you traded up in round 4 to get. He's been hurt back-to-back training camps. He has seen a little action from everything I've seen. He's not overwhelming as a run blocker, and he struggles in pass protection. Man, you got a lot of holes here. This isn't going to be a one-year fix. It's going to be a multi-year fix. But how you get better and how you dig your way out of the salary cap kind of hell you in by picking young players via the draft.
The salary cap and the roster age.
That is the big thing. Already, the estimates that this team is going to be over $70 million over the salary cap next year. For 2025. So the Saints did this for many years. When they needed money, they would restructure Drew Brees' contract. Drew wasn't beating his chest saying, oh, I helped him out, but that's the bottom line. He was one of the guys that did it. So Drew's not here anymore. Banker Brees is gone. So you're going to have to go get your coin from Derek Carr. Like it or not, He's going to be on this roster in 2025. You're going to have to do something with that contract. And he's going to be on this team. If he's the starter, I don't know. And I don't know what happens in 2026. But he's on this team in 2025. You've dug yourself a pretty big financial hole. Now, every year they get out of it. But all you're doing is kicking the can down the road. It's like a credit card. And you say, oh, I don't owe any more to this company, but I got a new credit card, so I just switched over the debt to the other card. You still owe the money. You still owe it. And so, Larry, to answer your question, it's all built around personnel. Bottom line, you're a lot smarter coach when you got better players. I've been told that by many coaches, including guys that are in my family. I'm a lot smarter coach when I got better players. And so I think that's something that they have to straighten out. Mickey Loomis has got to take a long look at the structure here and who's giving him that information on college players, on pro players, and they haven't hit. Haven't hit in the draft since 2017 other than Eric McCoy. Now, Taliese Fuaga, that dude can play. He is a really good pick for them. But, you know, it's just a handful of guys. And you got rid of one yesterday. He could start for every team in the NFL. But, you know, maybe he didn't quite walk the exact line that they wanted. And I think he really wanted to get out. I think he wanted to go to another team. And sometimes you cut up a little bit when that happens. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Have on with us Marlon Favorite from the LSU Sports Network right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Cullen Steele in studio. And we're going to go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. He was a member of the 2009 Super Bowl champions, New Orleans Saints, and the 2007 national champs of the LSU Tigers. You hear him as part of the LSU Radio Network. Marlon Favorite. Fave, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Well, hello, somebody. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Great to have you on, Fave. Before we start talking LSU, Alabama, I want to get your take on the Saints, because I know you keep a close eye on that also. Fave, I think, you know, this was sort of building up after a while, but, you know, and talking to people that have called, and, man, everywhere you go, they ask about it, and they had to make the change at head coach. You know, it was the tipping point Sunday to lose to the Panthers, but when you get down to the bottom line here with it, this is a personnel problem, Fave. You don't have enough good players at this stage. And some of your top players, man, they pushing the age limit. They played their best football. So give me your take on that situation, because you've been in locker rooms when, man, you say, this ain't working no more. And you know when you got a talented team around you.
You do it, and I can watch, and you see it in the press conferences. You just see it in the emotions on the players' faces that coach was losing the team. He started to lose faith in the team. I think a golden moment, like a moment that really showed this happening, was when Jameis went on and said, okay, forget what he's talking about. I'm going to hand Jamal Williams the ball off, and we're going to score a touchdown. I think in that moment there, I started to see why he lost most of the locker room. And then, you know, we start this season off pretty good. Two big-time wins against Carolina and the Cowboys. And then the roll-off seven straight after that is, you know, we hadn't seen anything around here like that since 1999. That's years ago, right? I can remember when Cash Money Records was taking over for the 99 in 2000. Hello, somebody.
I know that would jog your 99 memory.
Right. Shout out to Juvenile. You know, he probably like, man, it's been like that since I dropped 400 degrees. But that was just too much. And you look at a guy like Mickey Loomis, he got to start looking at himself in the mirror like, you know, am I making the right decision? I mean, this is the same guy that was, you know, smacking his teeth and other guys that started off this, you know, so now he had to backtrack that because he was defending Dennis for a while. But, you know, I think ultimately we made the right choice.
Fave, LSU, Alabama, and you can see it sort of building up a little bit. But this is really a playoff elimination game. The loser here, he ain't going nowhere. I mean, he would go to a bowl game, but he ain't in the top 12. I look at it this way. Both quarterbacks are really good. Both teams can't run the football. Now, Alabama can run it if Milrow can run it, but they're not a real physical team up front either to run the football. And LSU, I got no idea what's happening up front. They can pass protect, but they can't run the ball. Every once in a while, Durham gets off a big run, but he's doing that off speed himself. And I wish they'd run a little bit more wider plays for him to see if he can hit stride and get up the field. And defensively, Faith, I've never seen Alabama this bad in the secondary. Man, they got holes. Now, I know they had a first-round pick guy go to Detroit, and then Kool-Aid's with the Saints. He was a second-round pick, and they had a transfer. He was a terrific freshman. He goes to Ohio State. But their secondary is not real good. And you look at LSU, man, they got torched against A&M. It looked like they had never seen the read option before. This team, both teams have flaws across the board. My thing is, it's going to come down to one thing. Which quarterback makes the big mistake in the fourth quarter? Not the big play, the big mistake.
Mike, you nailed it. It's really going to go down to who's going to be able to play mistake-free football. As they say, we can say this a number of ways. I've taken it back to when I used to sit in those meetings after a game, and we would have to look at plays where I had a mental error or a misassignment or a missed tackle. When you look at that quarterback position, Nussmeier is having a great year. He's in the mid-pack of the Heisman conversation based on the numbers he's putting up in the production and the passing. But now it's going to be about eliminating the mistakes. That's one thing I can say at LSU. We got spoiled with our last two Heisman quarterbacks. They didn't make a lot of mistakes with the ball. So I think, you know, having 2 weeks going into this Alabama game, Nussmeier had an opportunity to say, you know what, I watched the film. I saw what we made some mistakes. We watched enough of Alabama. We see when they roll a certain coverages. I could kind of see on film when they blitz. And you know, those things hopefully throughout a week or two of preparation to kind of help eliminate those mistakes. If Tiger Stadium, Mike, let's check this out. Tiger Stadium, a big weekend, a night game, college day, game day. Hello, somebody. They're going to be in old Baton Rouge. You know what I'm talking about? Calling Baton Rouge, you know? And it's one of those opportunities for Nussmeier to put his name up in the Heisman conversation. Hopefully we have the birth of some superstars on defense, because where Alabama lacks at cornerback and safety, I think we have a slight edge with Ashton Stamps, with Zay Alexander. I mean, these guys grading out exceptionally well on the back end. So it's going to really boil down to your point. Who can make the least amount of mistakes on this stage?
For 3.5 games, I was so impressed with the two edge rushers, Savion Jones and then Braden Swenson. Now, that second half against A&M, there was nothing impressive about any player on defense. But your thoughts, you played the defensive line position. Fave, you could have given me five names and said one of these guys are going to lead the team in sacks and be one of the leaders in the SEC. And there's no way I'm picking Swenson. He showed me nothing that he could be that type guy this year. And look what he's turned out to be. And Savion, you know, I saw him at St. James, which isn't that far from my home. And, you know, he was maybe 225 when he came into LSU. And then I thought he got too heavy last year and they had kicked him inside. That wasn't his position. I think he's much better out on the edge. A&M kind of caught them with their pants down, and, man, the two ends really gave up some big plays. But for 3.5 games, those two ends, man, it was like watching when you guys played, to have that type pressure being put on quarterbacks on a consistent basis.
Yeah, listen, those two names you mentioned, Savion Jones and Swenson, it's been night and day with those guys since last year. But it is curtains when you have an opportunity to rush well, be effective. It doesn't always mean you have to get a sack on a quarterback. It's getting your hands in his face, getting the pressure, making him throw a ball a bit sooner than he wants to. You know, I think if we could go out there and do that early and often, to your point, that rush is going to get after it. And it may be the determining factor for us in this game.
Fave, man, I've been asked this a bunch of times, so I'll throw it to you. I don't know if maybe the guys coming into the college ranks, their physicality and as a run blocker, they get much more time now than ever before working on pass protection sets. I mean, we had the camps. We see them. They know how to pass protect pretty well. Run blocking, I watch Alabama. I watch LSU. They're not good there. They don't move anybody off the ball. So kind of break it down. Why hasn't that worked? LSU returned 4 of 5 starters from a year ago. Now, Garrett's down for this game. But still, you haven't been able to really move anybody off the point of attack, is basically that. And you know what? To watch Alabama, you know who's the big play? It's Milroe.
Yes. It's Milroe catching defensive ends off guard and making the big runs. Yeah, to your point, you're absolutely right. And to answer your question about this offensive line that LSU has, and I mean, coming into the season, this was the best group, the number one offensive line in the country by a lot of beat writers and a lot of national folks who covered the game. But one thing I want people to be mindful of this offensive line, the last 2 years, Jay and Daniels spoiled these guys.
You're right.
We didn't have to run block last year. We didn't really have a consistent running game, but with Jaden. Jaden was our lead rusher. So when you have a man with wheels like that, what does LSU do exceptionally well every week? Pass block. That's their strength, because that's all they had to do exceptionally well the last few years. Now Jaden is gone. Nussmeier is more of a pro-style quarterback. He's going to sit in the pocket, but we're going to hand the ball off. We're going to have to move some guys off the ball. Those guys hadn't been doing that the last 2 years. So the blocking scheme changed up when we lost our quarterback. And, I mean, that this is something that this big dog group had to get accustomed to. And fortunately for us, they started to catch on as the year progressed.
Fave, last question for you would be about Chris Hilton. It's been disappointing for him. Manning Camp, Garrett Nussmeier talked to me about him. He's like, Mr. Mike, I'm telling you, he's ready for a breakout year, and he's got the injury, and then it kind of resurfaced again. But what could he mean to this football team? Because they really haven't pushed the envelope deep. They throw the short intermediate passes a lot, but not per se the deep pass. To catch a team off and kind of back you off coverage a little bit. A healthy Chris Hilton, what does he mean to LSU?
Oh, we saw flashes of it last week. He's someone, he complements this receiving corps so good because he has top-end playing experience. I mean, he was on this squad with Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, so he knows what it means to be an elite receiver. And to that speed, he can blow the top off an offense off of a secondary, and that opens up and creates lanes for West Bank's very own Aaron Anderson, or creates those one-on-one matchups that we want to see Tyron Lacy have. So he's very valuable to this team. You know who could be him, but the opportunities he got, even touchdowns, it was either bad balls or he dropped it. And I'm going to say Sheldon Sampson. He's someone I thought has that, like, almost like Mekhi Dupree frame, but could catch the ball at the high points. So I thought he would be a bigger contributor. But to your point, Chris Hilton gives us those for sure hands, the speed, and he has the size.
Fave, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Man, always enjoy having you on. Great insights. I appreciate your time. But I got to tell you something Herb Tyler told me to tell you. You see, because we do that 2.5 hours right before we throw it to the LSU radio network. So Herb told me to tell you, man, we serve this to you on a silver platter. It's easy to do.
Y'all sure do, baby. Y'all serve it to us nice. Shout out to my boy Herb. Herb came to my show. I performed at the Chicken Fest a few years ago. He was out there like, hello, somebody. So that's my boy, Go Tigers.
Thank you, Fave. I appreciate it, buddy.
Mike, thanks for having me.
Thank you,
man. Have a good one.
All righty. Marlon Favorite, part of that 2009 Super Bowl winning team with the Saints and the 07 LSU National Championships. How about that? A local guy. And you get to do it in college.
That's the dream.
In the pros.
That is the
dream. In your own area. My goodness. We'll be back with more LSU talk, and we'll have on with us Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Cullen Steele in studio. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, he's the publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, Zach Nagy. Zach, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Zach, I've heard it from so many people, and so I'm going to ask you, you keeping up with it a little closer than I am during the football season because I got NFL to juggle. But from a high school standpoint, what is LSU looking at to bring in before the December signing day? Because, man, they've done a great job so far in getting the commitments. Now, that commitment is about as worthless as the piece of paper that it's not written on. But your thoughts on what else is LSU looking to bring in, and maybe a couple names?
Yeah, look, Mike, first, I appreciate you for having me back on here. And second of all, they've assembled the top five recruiting class in America. They've pieced together a haul with over 25 pledges to this point, and they've been dominating the recruiting trail. They've been getting visitors in town, whether it's game days, et cetera. Even on the bye week, you saw them bring in a lot of guys to come in and check out campus. So from a recruiting perspective, they're doing a fantastic, fantastic job. The one name is Jakeem Stewart, and that's the major headliner here, yep, remaining in the 2025 recruiting class. And Stewart's a player who was in the 2026 class, ultimately reclassified to 2025, but prior to reclassifying, he was the number one player in America. This is a program-changing, generational-type player that LSU's rolling out the red carpet for, and he'll be in town this weekend in Baton Rouge for an official visit. He's checking out LSU. He's checked out USC, Oregon, Ohio State, you name it. He's got the top programs in the country certainly on his radar. So he's a player that LSU's going for. He's a boot boy. He's a guy from Louisiana. So they're going to continue to turn up the heat for him. And then they'll continue working through a couple of senior evals before the time's done, before that early signing period, the first week of December. So if you're looking for a name, it's Jakeem Stewart. That's the guy that they're really rolling out the red carpet for and really hoping to get done by the time the early signing period comes along.
Zach, I saw him at Louisiana Line Camp. He was a man amongst boys. I mean, he is. Now, again, I think you're going to have somebody press the right buttons with him. But, man, is he immensely physically gifted. Good gracious. A guy that young, and yet he's built the way he is.
Yeah, you're looking at a guy. He's 6'6", 270 pounds, and he's going ahead and skipping his senior year. So it's been an interesting recruiting process for him. He was ineligible his freshman year at St. Augustine, dominated his sophomore campaign, 20 sacks, significant number of tackles for loss, et cetera. This is a guy who dominated a sophomore campaign, and then he elected to make the decision to reclassify. It seemed like St. Augustine wasn't quite going down that path for him, so he made the decision to transfer to Edna Carr. He's ineligible this year for his junior campaign, and then he's going to make a decision the first week of December to go to another program, so he's going to bypass his senior year. It's an interesting recruitment, but certainly one that a lot of programs are preparing to roll the carpet out for. Small sample size, but like you said, when you have a guy 6'6", 270 at that age, it's hard not to want to continue pushing for him down the stretch, and LSU is going to do just that, headlined by Frank Wilson at the helm of his recruitment.
Zach, when watching LSU all year, I think this team plays a lot better when C.J. Daniels is on the field. He can work that short intermediate area very well. He's sure-handed, and you know he's never going to see double coverage because they sort of bracket Kyron Lacy so much. And Aaron Anderson has really come through for him big. But I think maybe the most valuable guy has been C.J. Daniels. Because of what he does a lot of dirty work. And when he wasn't there, the offense didn't run as well.
I think it's a fantastic point, Mike, just because the dirty work, emphasis on that. He's not a guy who's come out here and made the impact in the receiving game that a lot of people might have expected coming off of a 1,000-yard-plus season at Liberty, double-digit touchdown. He obviously did a lot in the receiving game for the men, but he's been doing the dirty work, Mike. He's been doing a lot of blocking. He's a guy that the team can fall back on in the huddle when need be. He's experienced. He's a veteran. He's a player that the program really, really thinks highly of, and the goal is obviously to have him out there come Saturday night at a full capacity. He's been battling a lower body injury. He was questionable leading up to Texas A&M, gave it a go for the first half, ultimately couldn't play in the second half just because that injury was lingering a little bit more. So the hope is that he worked through the bye week, built his body back up, continues doing that this week, and we'll be good to go for this weekend against Alabama. But like you said, he's about as valuable as it gets for the offense and Garrett Nussmeier.
With Dellinger down, give everybody in the listening audience a little bit of a bio on his replacement. And the one thing with Dellinger, man, he's moved all across the board. He came in as a tackle. They put him at guard. And then I remember Coach Kelly coming on with us, and he was like, Mike, I'm going to try him at center. And then they switched him back out to the guard position. So give us a little bit of a bio on his replacement.
Yeah, look, Mike, you and I talked a couple months back, and you kept instilling in me the fact that your backup linemen have to be as good as your starters, because in due time, one of them will go down with an injury. Here we are. Garrett Dellinger's out this weekend. He underwent that tightrope surgery on his ankle. The hope is that he'll be back next weekend against Florida. But a little bit of a look into his replacement, Paul Mabanga. He's a beast. I mean, he's a 6'5", 315-pound offensive lineman, redshirt freshman, so he's not necessarily as experienced as you may like. But he entered the fold in a really nice way in College Station, and he's been playing some good ball his entire career. He's a Georgia native, played against some really good talent out there, made the move to commit to LSU over Georgia and other programs, redshirted in year one, fast forward to year two, and he's making an impact. And Brad Davis and this coaching staff have really talked highly of what he provides this team. Now he's going to get his first SEC start. We'll see what he can do, but you have a 6'5", 6'6", 315-pound menace ready to make an impact for this team.
I hope he can run block. I know he can pass block. Man, because I see him now come out. They know how to pass protect. My thing is move somebody off the line of scrimmage. They're not great at that. Give us your two biggest keys to victory for LSU if they defeat Alabama.
Yeah, look, I'll pick one on both sides of the ball for you. And for me, I'm going to steer a little bit away from the Jalen Milroe aspect of things. Obviously, this is a guy who's going to come out and click on all cylinders. He's a player who can kill you with his legs, with his arm, one of the top dual threat signal callers in America. But you got to limit him on first down specifically. You got to stay in front of the chains if you're the LSU defense. You can't let them get second and short, third and short. You got to limit them in that aspect there. So for me, when I'm looking at the LSU defense, it's containing him, but specifically on first down. And then fast forward to the other side of the ball. Like I've been saying this for weeks now, I feel like you just got to diversify the playbook. You have to get the running game, the rushing attack in the mix. You said just a second ago when referencing Paul Mabanga and hoping that he can run block. We know they can pass block. We know that they can give Nussmeier time in the pocket. It's just about diversifying the playbook, getting the run game going, and not falling back on Garrett Nussmeier so much. It's tough when you have a quarterback throwing the ball 50 times.
Can't work.
In due time, something is going to happen that doesn't favor the team. We saw that in College Station with a couple of questionable decisions. Fast forward to this week against Bama. You want to hope that you can take the weight off of his shoulders a little bit, add the rushing attack. And even if it's not just handing it off in the backfield, Mike, it's about finding extensions of the run game, whether it's checkdowns to Caden Durham in open space, a little shuffle pass or two to Aaron Anderson, Xavion Thomas. Get extensions of the run game going. Take the weight off Nussmeier's back. To me, that's about as critical of a key to victory as it gets.
Zach, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Always great insights, buddy. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
All righty. Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. We'll be back to finish it up here in hour number one right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870. I want to thank Marlon Favorite, Zach Nagy, for giving us a lot of insights on LSU. Also, Marv Fave has talked about the Saints also. Glenn, hold on to where you at. I'll take you right at 5:10 after the news break. Got a lot more here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL right after.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
To this news break. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Cullen Steele in studio. I know we're having some problems, I think, with the sound on 870. They're trying to fix it. But we had some low signal or low sound in the first hour, so we got our guys trying to take care of it. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. And want to tell everybody at 6:30 tonight, it'll be pregame between as we preview the New Orleans Pelicans playing the Cleveland Cavaliers, who got a pretty damn good team. And then 7 o'clock tip-off, and you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL. Let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text lines. Go to Glenn and Kenner. Glenn, in a huddle with Mike and Cullen.
Hey, Mike, you got me on?
I got you, babe.
Okay, great. Good evening to you. Listen, I was hoping that Bobby would be there because I wanted to get his opinion on this also.
Okay.
Perhaps maybe tomorrow, you know, when he comes back on the show, you could have him comment on it.
Okay, I'll sure.
What I want to know, this is what I don't understand. The Saints drafted three linebackers within the last couple of years. Zach Bond, he's starting for Philadelphia. They're 7-2. Keenan Ellis is starting with Atlanta. They're in first place. And Alex Anzalone is with the Lions. I don't know if he's starting or not.
Yes, he is.
What I don't understand is that, you know, and I'm trying to be constructive when I say this as far as with Mickey Loomis and Dennis Allen, but these are three defensive players the Saints drafted, and they're starting for winning teams. Okay, you know, we wasted draft picks on them. Did we get anything for these guys? You know, and I mean,
no.
I mean, you know, you're talking about talent evaluation and everything. What's up with that?
Okay, let me answer them one at a time. With Anzalone, Alex, and he sort of had this history from high school to college and into the NFL. He couldn't stay healthy, and he was hurt here quite a bit with the Saints. Legit injuries, legit stuff. And I think they felt, you know, this is kind of a long trend with Alex, and they weren't going to re-sign him. And, you know, the connection there, certainly Dan Campbell, Aaron Glenn, they took a shot with Alex Anzalone. Ah, you would figure. He goes to Detroit, and he's been healthy the entire time. That's a little bit of bad luck on your part. But, man, Anzalone, I know the reason they didn't try to re-sign him was not about talent. It was about could he stay healthy. The thing with Zach Bond is the most puzzling of the three because they didn't find the right spot for him. When you watch Zach Bond at Wisconsin, he was a pass rush guy. They tried to make him into a middle linebacker. He had never played there before. And then somebody, you know, they got people trying to horse hockey you, telling you stories about how great he is in coverage. He got better in the coverage part of the game, but he is a guy that wants to play in drive. And you watch him this year. And that was one of the things with Vic Fangio. He brought up, man, he's been well coached with the Saints, and I want him. I found the spot for him here. Mike Hodges does a good job with the linebackers, really does. And so I never understood the fit of why you didn't let Zach play that natural position he was playing at Wisconsin. And they did a lot with him coming off the edge and his ability to run the field. He wasn't great in coverage. He's gotten better, but he was never great there. With Zach Bond, it's almost, with Caden Ellis, almost the exact same thing. Okay, he got hurt. He had a, he was basically kind of redshirt year. Then all of a sudden he hits it big when they figure out they didn't have a pass rush late. They put Caden on the edge. He did that all the time in college. That was his gig. But he wanted to try free agency. That was his deal. And the Saints used a lot of two linebacking core. And so with DeMario and they picked Pete Werner, I think Caden was, man, you know, let me find a team that I can start right away. And his connection there was Ryan Nielsen. And he has said it. I went there. Money was certainly a part of it. But also, too, he knew the defensive coordinator was Ryan Nielsen. So all three different. And you're right. They picked every one. I think Zach Bond, to me, is the biggest mystery of why it didn't work. Caden Ellis, we saw him his final season with the Saints, what he could really do. And that was as a pass rusher. And I thought he had gotten to be a pretty good guy in the coverage part of the game. But he had some injuries early. Anzalone, I thought was a good player, could not stay healthy. And then he goes to Detroit, and he's been healthy since he signed up there. It's amazing. I think the biggest free agent from a law standpoint on defense was not keeping Trey Hendrickson.
I was going to say Trey Hendrickson. It was the same thing, injuries.
And Trey, once he got to a certain weight and it was right for him, well, you saw he could come off the edge, and he was pedal to the metal. Was he as gifted physically as Marcus Davenport? No. There ain't a lot of guys walking this earth that had that type of ability.
He is right now.
But Marcus, he was always, he had a nick and a scrape. You know, he wanted to play, and he was healthy. He's a man out there on the field. But you didn't see that. The one thing you saw with Trey every week, he brought it to you. He came off that edge. He could run the field. He was relentless. And he signs with Cincinnati. Okay, you can't name me too many players on defense for the Bengals, but you can name Trey Hendrickson. He comes to play, and he's a menace out there. I think if there was a redo, Trey Hendrickson would be the redo.
Are you kidding me? He's leading the league in sacks right now. Anybody who is blind would say that's a redo. I'd give up everything.
And okay,
for how sackless this team has been.
But again, this is a little bit of politics. Look what you gave up to get in round one to pick Marcus Davenport.
Yeah.
You gave up a lot of capital, and so you're going to defend him. Did he have talent? Yes. And he wasn't like Anzalone. Once Alex left and he went to Detroit, Alex has been healthy. Marcus Davenport, he's been with two teams. He's been hurt on both of them. So now he's collecting $10, $12 million a year. God bless him for that. But, man, the Trey Hendrickson loss is major.
No, that one stinks.
That one, because you had a guy that would have given you that consistent pass rush, and to think you could have had him and Carl Grandison as the tag team at defensive end. And so, again, it didn't work out, but you're absolutely right. I did think Mike Hodges did a good job with all three of them to develop them, especially with Zach and Caden. I'm not sure Mike was involved that much with Anzalone, but I know he had a lot to do with Zach Bond, Caden Ellison. Vic Fangio this offseason, he made it known. When we went out looking for linebackers, Zach Bond was the guy I wanted. Now, the other guy he whiffed, that was Devin White. And, you know, it didn't work there. Devin was too much of a freelance guy. Now he's with the Houston Texans. See if D'Amico Ryans and get it to work out there. Great call, Glenn. And I'll also ask Bobby about it when he gets back. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. We'll have on with us from BetMGM tonight, Brad Evans, right after this break on the Big 870 WWE.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Andrew Lopez is reporting this, and again, we'll have the Pelicans and Cleveland Cavaliers tonight, pregame at 6:30, tip-off at 7, but Andrew is reporting that Willie Green says that Zion Williamson, Jose Alvarado, and Jordan Hawkins will all warm up before a call is made on if they play.
Okay, so nothing confirmed.
Nothing, but Zion and Hawkins went through full shoot-around this morning.
Okay.
And then Jose tweaked his ankle in the shoot-around.
Okay, well, that's a bad okay.
So, buzzed look, man. It just is bad.
Yeah.
Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. And on the line is the host of BetMGM Tonight and Odyssey Sports BetQL Insider, Brad Evans. BetQL Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all of the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the BetMGM Tonight podcast for more analysis. Just search BetMGM Tonight wherever you find your podcast. Brad, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hola, amigos. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you, Brad. Right off the bat, LSU, Alabama, under the lights in Tiger Stadium. What you call?
Man, it's going to be a barn burner, isn't it, boys? Yep. You know, Alabama has been far from invincible, to say the least, this season. And they're a team that's won three of the last four meetings in this series, stretching back to 2020. You look at LSU, I think they're going to, you know, score the cover in this game, quite honestly, and win this game straight up as well. You know, you look at the Tigers, number 8 EPA per play offense, number 23 in defense. Then Alabama, pair of fives nationally in both of those categories. Look at a lot of the data and the sites that are out there. Have the Crimson Tide as a slight favorite, but I think LSU, a team that has ample motivation, barely on the outside looking in, the initial college football playoff ranking. They get a win here. They bounce off the bubble and in the projected field. So mammoth implications in this game, and I think go Tigers will certainly apply. So I'll take LSU plus a 2.5, and I'll sprinkle action on the money line straight up.
Whoa, go Tigers. All right, Thursday night football, Cincinnati Bengals, Baltimore Ravens. Man, Cincinnati's got defensive issues all across the board except for one spot, Trey Hendrickson. And man, now you got to go up against King Henry and Lamar Jackson. Good luck. Your thoughts?
Godspeed, I will say that. Look, last time these two teams faced was 41-38 in overtime. The Baltimore game had a victory there on the road. So another game with a lot of shootout appeal, guys. I tell you what, if you're a fantasy football enthusiast, if you like betting overs on certain player props, this game is for you, because I think there's going to be points of plenty from start to finish. The one area you could really do some damage offensively, Baltimore outstanding in that front seven. I think Chase Brown, a guy that had a breakout game last week on his 30-plus touches, found the end zone a couple of times, over 100 yards on the ground alone. He'll probably kept a bay in this one, but Jamar Chase had nearly 200 receiving yards in the first matchup. He gets any piece of Brandon Stevens in this game. He's going to go well north of the century mark yet again. Joe Burrow, I think he's good for 300 or more passing yards. Get that at significant plus money right now. Probably 2 to 3 touchdowns to the air as well. Won't get quite 5 air strikes like he had in that first matchup, but this game is going to be breathtaking. It's going to be extraordinary offensive football from beginning to end, and I think the Ravens will emerge victorious in a hotly contested affair, but it could be, again, 1st-to-40 wins.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it'll be a high-scoring game. Georgia, Ole Miss.
Well, Georgia Ole Miss, another game with a lot of implications there. Another game with a barn burner feel to it as well. And Ole Miss on the outside looking in the initial college football playoff ranking like LSU. They need another marquee victory. And what a ripe opportunity to secure exactly that. And look at UGA laying the 2.5 there. I kind of like Ole Miss at home catching the 2.5. A team that, again, has been outstanding EPA data. Number 4 in the country EPA per play offense. Number 6 in EPA per play defense. A little bit better than Georgia in both those categories. Georgia number 10 in offense, 9 in defense. I think it's, you know, it's going to be nip and tuck. It's going to come down the final possession. But I think Ole Miss is going to win this sucker, maybe on a last-second drive with a hand there, Jackson Dart, maybe finding somebody in the end zone, maybe giving them field goal range. But I like Ole Miss taking this sucker by 3 points. I'll take them straight up on the money line like I did with LSU.
I never thought I'd say this 9 games into the season. An undefeated Indiana Hoosiers basketball team, maybe, but an Indiana football team going up against I can't call them national champs, but they were national champs last year, the Michigan Wolverines.
Yeah, look, man, Michigan's an absolute punchline right now. The quarterback play has been a monumental struggle, and, you know, Tuttle is no longer even on the team. He retired from football. That really kind of says it all, what the state is offensively for that school. And, you know, defensively, still rather stout up front. On the back end, though, they are a burnable and beatable team. And it got Rourke, quarterback for Indiana, guy can really twirl the pigskin accurately, consistently down the field, really can pick you apart. And Indiana is quite underrated defensively. They're a better defensive team, and according to EPA data, than Wolverines are. Indiana, number 19 EPA per play defense, number 2 in EPA per play offense. Michigan, a woeful 51 in EPA per play offense, 36 in EPA per play defense. I know 14.5 is a boatload of points, and it might frighten some people away, especially with Captain Hook. Yar, shiver me timbers, a part of that equation. But I think Indiana is going to win by 3 or more scores and silence everybody with an opportunity in a couple of weeks, taking on the Ohio State in Columbus. And we're going to see the real true colors in that showdown in Columbus.
Brad, I'll never forget, this was 2020, and LSU was defending national champs. So I talked to Coach Orgeron. He's like, Mike, hey, they treated us like we were the same team, but I didn't have the same players. Man, he said, you know, they took the boots to us anytime they could do it. And it goes to show you, man, when you lose so much to the NFL draft and to graduation, man, you're not the same team. You know, you're not that team that won the national championship. You're not even close. And boy, what a drop off at quarterback. Good gracious.
Yeah, man, it's been a misadventure, to say the least, for Michigan, whether it's Orgy or Tuttle or somebody else. They just do not have a competent quarterback that can bring it all to the table. And the problem was, you know, we're victims of their own success. You know, Harbaugh jumped to the NFL. They played the national title game, of course, won the whole shebang. So they're already late in the recruiting game with the transfer portal and NIL and all that at work. So they're already behind the eight ball. And even with the brand name superpower that they are at the University of Michigan, they weren't able to acquire a suitable and sustainable passer to set them up for success this year. So, you know, I'm not crying tear in my beer. I mean, anybody would probably sacrifice the following season to be subpar if you want a national title the year before. Michigan's going to be A-okay, but they're getting their comeuppance, if you will, this year.
All right, Brad, I'm not going to lie. I looked like an idiot last week, but I'm not alone in this. I don't think I was alone. Last Thursday, a very spooky Halloween, the Jets being 2.5-pointer, the Jets being favorites at all, regardless of those 2.5 points, and then somehow they come out and win. Now, I'm looking at the Sunday night game. It's Lions-Texans. I know it's in Houston. Should I trust the Texans again? Was that a trap game? I'm leaning Lions, and you know, it's what, 3.5 right now, and I just don't believe in the team.
Look, I believe in Lions more than anything else. I'm kind of with you.
I believe that.
You know, Captain Oak. Yeah, look, I picked Baltimore and Detroit to represent in New Orleans, your guys' wonderful city, for the Super Bowl this year, preseason. And so far, that's looking pretty good. And I think Baltimore is going to be able to get over the hump of Kansas City and Lamar's lack of success in those matchups historically. But, man, the Lions are bar none the best team in professional tackle football right now. And it's amazing to say, without Aiden Hutchinson, they're, you know, bookending on the defensive line. They've had some serious issues in the back end defensively. That's a vulnerable unit. I still believe in that secondary, and they are beatable in that capacity. But offensively, they're just a juggernaut with that 1-2 punch on the ground of Mandatory Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, doing a lot of dirty work underneath. Sam Laporta's had a subpar season, and they're still making plays. Jared Goff has been brilliant. They get Jameson Williams back off suspension this week. I think it's going to be all systems go, and they're going to come out with guns a-blazing against H-Town. So I will lay the chalk with the Lions, and I kind of like the over in the game overall. I think it's going to be a high-scoring battle from beginning to end.
No, I'm right there with you. The over set of 49, you know, the Lions 3.5-point favorites. I just don't have a lot of faith in the Texans right now. Maybe that was just a trap game, like I said. And they beat them up bad. And Lions beats up everybody bad, whether, you know, Goff has 83 yards or not. They're just dumping on people. But you did mention the Ravens and the Lions and in your Super Bowl picks, two teams that are going to stand in their way play this Sunday, Steelers-Commanders. What are you thinking about that game?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a wonderful showdown between a couple of squads. And Russell Wilson's really impressed me. Look, I was highly doubtful of him, you know, being inserted there under center over Justin Fields, who, you know, played pretty damn well when he was at the controls, a winning record overall. He was top 10 adjusted completion percentage before getting the rug pulled out from underneath him. But Russell Wilson's been more than adequate. He's been, you know, subpar in terms of his accuracy, but that moon ball, when he got a guy who can bend and contort the body like George Pickens, they can make beautiful music on the field. We've seen that. They add Mike Williams out of the mix with that trade with the Jets, get another guy that can really be a field stretcher. We'll see how much he's got left in the tank. But really the unsung hero of this team has been Najee Harris. The Alabama Slammer has been marvelous on the ground, and Jalen Warren's back and healthy, and has been more than suitable as a change of pace running back. I think that 1-2 punch combined with Wilson, it adds that offensive balance, and we know the defense can really get after the quarterback. I do like Washington, though, in that game. They're a team on a mission right now. Jane Daniels has been utterly amazing. Surefire lock to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. And dare I say it, guys, I think the Commanders are going to take the NFC East division. They're plus 110 right now at BetMGM to do so. And I think they're going to undercut the Eagles in the end.
Brad, Saints-Falcons, and this has always been sort of a weird game. Stuff happens that you couldn't predict. I mean, look, the first game. The Falcons don't score one offensive touchdown against the Saints, and they somehow win the game. Okay, you had a muff punt for a score, then a pick six. Now with the coaching change, with Darren Rizzi now the new head coach of the Saints for the remainder of the year, I watched the Falcons, and they're a really good running team, and when they can protect Kirk Cousins, man, he can carve you up. But I don't know from a defensive standpoint how good they are. They have a player here and there, especially up the middle with Grady Jarrett and Onyemata and A.J. Terrell in the backfield, but at defensive back. I'm not sure about how good they are on defense. So I think they win and try to tsunami you. They score as many points as they can, and they sort of hold on defense.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair assessment, quite frankly. Defense is inadequate. I will say that, you know, with the supreme confidence behind that description, you know, a team that's only number 20 right now in EP per play defense, so the back end defense of the two, you can really carve them up. And I think the slicing and dicing is going to be front and center potentially in that game for Derek Carr. And, you know, Alvin Kamara is a guy that can really get the job done. Taysom Hill, being a jack of all trades, whether it's a receiver or a runner, presents some problems. And I think this game is going to be a sneaky good shootout. I really truly believe that. I think Atlanta is, in an advantageous position. Marshon Lattimore now with the Commanders, obviously. That enormous story that went down, area of need and an upgrade, massive one for Washington in that secondary. And, I worry about Lonte Taylor there outside having to maybe contain Darnell Mooney in this game. We'll see if Drake London can play. He's day-to-day with that hit pointer. But, Atlanta's got weapons galore. Bijan Robinson doing some business on the ground. Tyler Allgeier being a power complement as well in that 1-2 punch and that rushing attack. So, yeah, defense, I think, is going to be optional for both teams in this game. And you're right. Every single time they get together, it's what, first to 30, 35 wins. I think it's going to be the case yet again.
Man, a prop bet. Tyler Allgeier has been a pain in the butt to the Saints every time he plays them. Man, that little dude, he comes after you. He's not super fast. He's not quick. He's not the most powerful guy. But he's a little bit of a combination of the three. And I don't know if it's style or what. They have had a lot of difficulties stopping Tyler Allgeier. So you might want to look at that as a prop, Brad. Just telling you, giving you a little hint right there.
Yeah, over under right now, BetMGM, 38.5. I'm with you. I would love to take the over on Tyler Allgeier on that particular prop, a guy that's top 10 in the NFL this season in yards after contact per attempt. All he does is play bully ball.
That's correct. Brad, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, we always love to have you on, and we love to hear your insider comments. Thanks so much, bud.
Muchas gracias, amigos. Good luck this weekend.
All righty. That was the host of BetMGM Tonight and Odyssey Sports BetQL Insider, Brad Evans. BetQL Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all of the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. We'll be back with Triple Option right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here, Mike DeTillier along with Steve Geller, Cullen Steele. For my Triple Option, we're going to go to our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line. I'll take Rob in Tarrytown. Rob, you my Triple Option. Give me the question, babe.
Question and a comment.
Okay.
Mike, how y'all doing this evening?
Great. Thank you, Rob.
The caller earlier, I think his name was Quinn. He mentioned the three linebackers. Alexander Vonnie, Zach Vaughn, and
Caden Ellis.
Caden Ellis. Who drafted those three linebackers?
The Saints did.
I know. Under Sean Payton or under Dennis Allen?
Oh, no. All under Sean. All under Coach Payton.
All under Sean. And it appears everything that Dennis Allen did once he got the position, he tried to put his own thumbprint on the team. And he let some players go that shouldn't have been let go, in a lot of fans' opinions. Now, Alexander Lonnie had injury issues.
Yes, he did.
Marshon Lattimore had injury issues.
Yes, he did.
Okay, my point is, he tried to put too much of a thumbprint on the team, letting everybody know that it was his team. It wasn't Sean Payton's draft picks anymore. And I think
Anzalone left before Dennis took over, though.
Yeah, Alex, I think, left the same year that Coach Allen took over, if my memory's right on that. And then Zach Vaughn, he was here with Dennis Allen in that deal, and so was Caden Ellis. My thing is, sometimes it was baffling how they were used. But, Rob, it's certainly something to think about, what you bring up. Everybody wants to put their own stamp on a defense. And, with Anzalone, that I could understand. Because, man, I went back and doing the draft stuff with him. He was hurt in high school. He was hurt a lot at Florida. He was hurt a lot with the Saints. He goes to Detroit, and he's healthy. You don't see that happen a lot. He was a good football player here. He really was. Just couldn't keep him healthy. And I thought the fit was bad with Zach. They moved him all over. And with Caden Ellis, I knew once he got those sacks late in that final year, man, he was going to cash out. So, great comments, Rob. We appreciate it. Steve?
Guys, I'm going to be looking at the Cleveland Browns organization, a big mess over there. And general manager Andrew Berry just recently was noncommittal when he was asked about Deshaun Watson standing with the franchise as the quarterback continues to struggle before he sustained that season-ending Achilles tendon tear in Week 7. Before the injury, Watson posted the lowest total QBR of any qualified passer in the NFL. The Browns were 1-5 in Watson's 6 starts before the injury, and he didn't reach 20 points in any of those games. Since trading for him, the Browns' 3 first-round picks and giving Watson a fully guaranteed $230 million contract, he started 19 games with each of them, the last of the 2 seasons, and both have ended in injuries. Since making his debut in Cleveland, Watson's got a 33.8 total QBR. That ranks 32 out of 33 in qualifying passers. The only one lower, Carolina's Bryce Young.
Man, I can't remember, Steve, another guy that's fallen from grace as a football player.
Right.
Now, again, the off-the-field issues are another thing. But you talk about talent. Everybody told you the same thing.
He looked top tier in Houston.
He looked like one of the best. And he carried the Texans on his back, so to speak, team-wise. And then to fall like he did. Now, was the off-the-field stuff part of it? Was injuries part of it? Combination?
Right.
But, man, you got to go back. I remember Dwayne Thomas with the Cowboys. He was a great back for them. But, you know, he had – and he admitted he had drug issues. And he fell off the cliff. They tried to trade him to the Chargers, and he didn't do nothing there. He ended up with the then Washington Redskins. But man, you talk about a slide down. Very few guys at that level. When you can't pinpoint it exactly on injuries, Cullen.
I'm going to keep it with the NFL. The Chiefs, after their Monday night performance, I was looking at something that I saw that came across my X feed from Bill Barnwell over at ESPN. The Chiefs' passing EPA per down ranks. First, they are 22nd in the league. On second down, they are 19th. And then on third down, they are first. And the difference between the second best team in EPA per passing on third down, the difference between the first and that team is larger than the difference between the second-place team and the 11th-place team. They have such a lead. It just goes to show Mahomes is undisputed one of the best all times on third down.
Man.
And you saw that throw he had to Hopkins? That's it.
That dude, I don't want him with the ball in his hands at the end of a game.
The third and anything?
You saw Baker Mayfield knew. It was like, flip it. I was like, oh,
okay,
man.
Baker's reaction was my reaction.
Right.
What?
It's over.
Oh, man, you got to be kidding me.
I want to say a stat I saw also is like the last like 7 times Mahomes has been in an overtime game, 6 of them he's won the coin toss, and the one he didn't was last year's Super Bowl, which they won anyway.
Wow.
Man. Keep a good look on that. You're not going to see a lot of guys play football at that level. I mean, you know, he is a man a cut above, and he's. I've made this comment. He reminds me of Pete Maravich with a bat, with a football. You know, man, Pete could do all kind of stuff with a basketball that was way before his time. But that's what Mahomes reminds me of. That he is the football version of Maravich. Now, Pete didn't win anything. Patrick's winning everything. And, man, what a combination. Him along with Andy Reid. You couldn't ask for a nicer dude. Man, Andy's one of the great guys in this business. Steve, I'm sorry that your team let him loose. But
They kicked him to the curb.
We'll be back to finish it off here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number 2 of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Steve Geller, Cullen Steele. Steve, you got Ollie Cosell coming on at 6:10 and right before the Pelicans game.
Yeah, going to gun out a little bit of inside info. What's going on with this team? I know some guys were warming up. We'll see who's good to go and who's not ready to play against a tough Cavs team. Unbeaten 8-0 this season, so come on, Pellies.
Man, are they good. Cleveland's really, really good. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.
What is up, everybody? It is Wednesday, November 6th here, and we're getting sports talk till 6:30 this evening, and I'll hand things over then to the Pelicans Radio Network as the Birds get ready to take on an undefeated Cleveland Cavaliers squad. 7 o'clock tip-off on AM and FM this evening. If you're looking for the LSU men's basketball game, that is over on The Bet. 92.9 FM and 1350 AM. Mentioned to you, obviously, big Pelicans game coming up tonight right here. Coverage starting 6:30. We are actually going to check in at the Smoothie King Center right now with Ollie Cosell, NBA writer. Ollie, how are things going over there, man? Are you? I'm hoping you're healthy enough for this game.
I am, but I guess what? I've got some good news, even better news than my availability. The fact that Zion Williamson, Jordan Hawkins, and Jose Alvarado, who are all questionable for this game, they're all playing.
Woohoo!
So just got announced they'll be in uniform. So Brandon Ingram won't be out there all alone.
Good to see here, obviously, because the rash of injuries, obviously we've been dealing with it with the Saints, and then it's spilling over into this Pelican season, has not been pretty, and you have a tough matchup tonight. Man, oh man, this Cleveland Cavaliers squad has been unbelievable and obviously unbeaten at 8-0 right now. Nate McMillan's done a heck of a job.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Steve, you know anytime you're missing a player or two, there's a chance your team, and NBA at least, can still win a game. But the fact that they were missing six last game, you saw exactly what happened against Portland, right? Pelicans played well, but then they decided to start doubling Brandon Ingram. And before you knew it, he of course, couldn't get a shot, so somebody else had to help and beat the Portland Trailblazers, and there was really nobody available. So that's the issue. And now, of course, tonight, totally different opponent, team that's probably playing better than anybody in the league. And you're right, Kenny Atkinson, their new coach, has, I think,
I said Nate McMillan.
And look, you had, you know, people are saying you got to trade one of Darius Garland, maybe even Jared Allen. And look, the fact of the matter is they're playing super well. So you've got two bigs you're going to be going up against when the team, the Pelicans, are one of the smallest. And, right, you've got to deal with two quick guards, Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell.
You look at this team now with the Zion Williamson being active in today's game, obviously huge for them. But what is the issue? Is it just a hamstring he's been dealing with?
Yeah, he had some soreness in the area, right, in his leg, where it was kind of, we were told it was the thigh/the quad area. So, yeah, it was one of his legs. And when you're as explosive as he is at his size, right, you've got to be extra careful. So you didn't want it to turn into something worse. So he went through his treatment, but he's available to go. We were just watching him warm up about 10, 15 minutes ago.
Looking at this matchup, what is going to be key for this Pel squad tonight to try and hand a tough Cavalier squad their first defeat of the season in the Smoothie King Center?
Yeah, without a doubt, you can't let them get in the lane, right? Huh. Where the Pelicans have really struggled this year is when a team that's bigger, a team that's committed to crushing the glass, really beats up on them. And I'm talking about Portland. You wouldn't expect Portland, team that finished last in the Western Conference last year, but they played with a lot of energy and they had some size, and that gave the Pelicans a lot of problems. They lost the rebounding edge in all three of those games, and that's what Cleveland can do for you. You've got Jared Allen, you've got Mobley, and then, of course, you've got to worry about their two guards that are breaking down opponents very well, and that was the Pelicans' calling card last 2 years, keeping opponents out of the lane. That's why the Pelicans are able to have a good defense despite not having a rim protector. The last few games, that's kind of slipped, and understandably. You traded Dyson Daniels. Herb Jones has been out. So, really, that onus has fallen now on guys that aren't as proven defensively. But, yeah, they're going to have to find a way, right? You can't have Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland getting in lane, of course, and going off for 25 points apiece. You got to slow down at least one of them.
Ollie, you look at the Pelican squad, and I think fans – getting a little discouraged, obviously, with the injuries and some of the poor play of late. But you look at the turnovers, I think that's been a big issue, too, for the squad. And hopefully things can get back together and get some positive momentum going with the squad. I know, obviously, the four-game home stretch didn't go as they'd like so far. Hopefully you can close it out with a victory tonight. And having some of those bodies back should at least help this team look a little bit more formidable. It's really not fair. And I know nobody wants to hear it to judge a squad when all these injuries are popping up, just like with the Saints. You know, you just have to, you know, next man up mentality. But it's really difficult when it's those star players that you're dealing with.
Yeah, Steve, I'm glad you mentioned the turnovers. Right, when the Pelicans have had 14 turnovers or less this year in the game, they've won. So they're 3-0 when they've stayed under 15, basically. Anytime they've gone 15 or more, they've lost each of those games. So, yeah, that is one category you want to keep a close eye on. And, look, it's become infinitely harder when DeJounte Murray broke his hand, right? They were counting on him to run the offense, and that's the way they practiced for a month, all preseason, that he was going to be able to push a pace for you, that Brandon Ingram wouldn't have to exert so much energy. He could run to his spots, pitch the ball, and then attack from there. Now he's being, of course, asked to initiate the offense. Same thing with Zion. So I think they're still going to have probably a few bumpy games, but it seemed like they were trending in the right direction, at least, before Zion got hurt. Because in that big win against the Pacers, I think the team had a season low of 8 turnovers. So if they can shoot for a goal like that, mimic that in any way tonight, they would put themselves in great position here at home to maybe give the Cavaliers their first loss of the year, because they're due, right? Hopefully the Cavaliers are coming in this building thinking, look at the Pelicans. They're 3-5. They're hurt. We don't have to bring our best. Hopefully, if they've got that mentality and the Pelicans play well, they can get that win.
Looking forward to it, Ollie. Always appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and enjoy the game tonight, man.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans, Ali Kosel. You can follow him on X at Ali Kosel, OLEHKOSEL. Going to take a break and be back with more of Sports Talk as they get ready for pregame coverage. Pelicans taking on the Cavs right here on WWL AM and FM tonight. Coming back after the break. All right, who wants to be in the Caesar Superdome Sunday to cheer on interim head coach Darren Rizzi and the Saints when they battle those dirty birds from Atlanta? Well, you can score 2 premium tickets to the game plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. That's an open bar, premium liquor, all-you-can-eat buffet from celebrity chef Aaron May. It's all overlooking Champions Square, too. Winning's easy. Just go to WWL.com/contest and enter your chance to win tickets to the Saints battling Atlanta from Dudley DeBosier, official injury lawyers of the Saints, and Saints Radio, WWL. Definitely looking forward to this matchup, and I know I've talked about, you know, things have been down for the black and gold. Things have been down for the Who Dat Nation. But I think everybody can get united on the front of hating Atlanta. It is hate week for Atlanta.
Oh, so much has been going on this week. I forgot about it.
I know. It just hasn't been as intense because you had, obviously, the letting go of head coach Dennis Allen,
yep,
the trading of Marshawn Lattimore, mm-hmm, and now there's this kind of flux of what's going on with this franchise into this matchup.
Oh, I was thinking bigger picture. There's the election. There's Alabama hate week. There's so much
too,
going
right
on. And I was just like, we were talking this morning with Jeff on Tommy Tucker, and he was like, you guys are forgetting we play Atlanta this week. And I was like, yeah, you're right. We just spent 3 hours talking about the election. We do play Atlanta this week. And then me and Tommy kind of got like reinvigorated. We were like, yeah, screw Atlanta. Like, we kind of woke
you go,
up a little
right,
bit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you, a reminder to everybody, there is the Atlanta Falcons coming to town this week for anybody that feels like they've kind of checked out on the black and gold at this point because yeah of the misery. But, you know, something to spoil their season a little bit. They're leading the NFC South right now, and you don't want them to sweep the season series against the Saints. And the Falcons, surprisingly, have been undefeated on the road this season, 3-0 Road Warriors right now.
Yeah, but I mean, Mike had, you know, we had Brad was up in the 5 o'clock hour, and he was mentioning kind of like these games between us and Atlanta, they're always weird. They're odd. They never follow, you know, we either blow them out, they blow us out, they win a game without scoring a touchdown somehow. Like, they're odd games. And the sentiment was basically like their defense might not stop our offense, which ironically has been kind of lackluster the last, you know, month or so. And it's just whoever's going to get to 35 first might have a shot. Hopefully it's us. But if we can quote unquote ruin the season like the Panthers did to us, like, it's a W in my book.
I don't know, but whoa, 35 points. If this offense right now can score 35 points, I might faint.
That's a W in my book, too, yeah.
You're looking at the injury report from today, Cullen. We had 4 not practicing, and Cedric Wilson, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Lucas Patrick, and, of course, Chris Olave dealing with a concussion. That's a big concern, obviously, going forward. Not just his status for this week, but for the season and kind of his career. Young guys sustained too many hits to the head already.
No, and it's like, What do you do? And I, like, who is it? We talk so much about Tua's situation, about like, will he come back? Should he come back? And I feel like we're also having the same conversation about Olave. And it's a terrible conversation to have, regardless of what side of the equation you're on, whether you think he should stay, you know, with the team, whether you think he should come back, like, or not, or just retire. Like, it doesn't matter. It's just unfortunate.
I'm sure they're weighing those options right now because of the status of the season, also his health. I wouldn't imagine, obviously, you're rushing anybody back with a concussion injury and also a history of concussions. Back with this injury report for the black and gold. Also in limited action today, you had JT Gray, Rico Payton, Jamal Williams, and John Ridgeway. Will Harris as well was back on the roster. Then a full practice listed, though. You had Nephi Sewell, Shane Lemieux, Alvin Kamara, who's always dealing with something. Right now he's listed with that hand issue. And Derek Carr, but not with the oblique. He said he was a full go with an illness. So like you, Cullen, he was a little bit under the weather.
I'm Steve Geller for Cullen Steele. We're going to have a great night heading into Pelicans basketball. Coming up next, pregame coverage and then tip off at 7 right here on WWL. Have a great night, everyone.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.